let's see. Yeah, it explains there, actually, in number three, about two-thirds of the way down. Krishna woke up and, opening his eyes, saw Nanda Maharaj and offered his obeisances, then told his mother, "Oh, what a dream I had. You wouldn't believe it. See, I had this dream that I left Vrindavan and I went to Mathura and I fought so many kings and then I went to Dwarka. Would you believe it? That's amazing. And then I built a city at Dwarka. And I fought so many kings. Oh, what an amazing dream." Then he sees Balaram, because Balaram is alive. Balaram is looking at him. And Krishna thinks, "Oh, Balaram is confused now about my dream." So he says, "Don't worry, Balaram. I'll explain later about the dream." So then he goes to Mother Yashoda, and she's holding some butter. And he asks her, "Can I take the butter, please?" Mother Yashoda just stands there. And Rohini says, that your mother, you've put your mother in so much anxiety because you just overslept so long. She thought something was wrong with you, that now she's just bewildered. So Krishna apologized to her and left. Just as he turned around, he grabbed the butter and stole it and went off. So then he met the gopis. And he went up to Radharani and spoke to her, "My beloved, I'll see you later." She said nothing. And he asked her, are you angry with me? Did you hear about my dream already? You know, that I married so many princesses. Did you hear that? Well, it was just a dream. So please don't be angry with me. But, you know, you still won't speak to me. Oh my gosh. Anyway, look, I'll be my beloved. I'll be back later. So he quickly looked around to see if Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj were watching, but they weren't. Then he threw some flowers to Radharani, embraced her and kissed her very quickly, and ducked away. Yes. So, this is now, let's see. We've gone through now point five. We're over the page. Now we've come to six in the overview book. This is now verse 46 to 49. That there's a little incident that happens amongst the devotees who are watching, hiding. They start to become overwhelmed. Mother Devaki, for the first time, she saw these interactions. And even though she's an old lady, really old, maybe 90 years old or so, but milk started just pouring from her breasts as the maternal mood, but along the lines of Yashoda, just started to overpower her. Then, the two sort of main unusual characters, Satyabhama, she's a great, very great devotee, but she has her kind of special, unusual characteristics. And Padmavati, of course, we know all about her. So when they saw these things, they became overwhelmed with conjugal attraction, and they started running out to just grab Krishna. But Uddhava and Kalindi stopped them. So then, it brings us now to number 7 in the overview book, and over to number 8 also, from verse 50 through to verse 59, that Krishna tells Balaram, because there are some real live cows there, because in Dwarka they have cows, although they don't have Mother Yashoda or the gopis. So Krishna told Balaram, come on, let's take out the cows. Then he saw, just around the corner, a little bit of water. And said, oh look, we're near the Yamuna. Let's take the cows down to the Yamuna. So they went down to the Yamuna. Then they saw, oh, the Yamuna has got a lot bigger. And look at these big waves. Oh, what happened? Then across from the Yamuna they saw the palaces of Dwarka. And Krishna thought, what? What happened? What's gone wrong? Something is wrong. So then Krishna understood that they tricked me. Someone's been tricking me. What is this? What's going on here? So quickly, Lord Balaram explained to Krishna, this is in point 8, you have a mission. You have descended to rid the world of the demons. So you have to do it. You have to do it. So Krishna then got fired up and said, okay, all right, I'll do it. In other words, I'll calm down and kill more demons, right more wrongs, and re-establish more dharma, things like this, make this world a better place. I'll do it. So they go back. They go back then to the palace. So in they walk, and where Uddhava, Devaki, Rukmini, Rohini, Satyabhama, all these people are, all the top devotees from Dwarka. So the Krishna and Balaram came back, and Uddhava then brought in all the queens, because he understood, now Krishna is going to explain to these ladies. He's going to preach to them and help them to understand the higher reality of Vrindavan and the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So Uddhava brought in all the queens. Devaki, who is a mother, not in the mood of conjugal love, of course, she's in the motherly mood. So she realized, oh, this is going to be a talk about conjugal love. I think I'll go and help prepare lunch. So she went off, feeling it would be inappropriate. So then everyone sat down, and Krishna started. But then he went and saw, wait a minute, where's Satyabhama? She's not here. So, Uddhava explains that, well, different things. Basically, like how they all saw what happened there in New Vrindavan. They want to understand it further. Satyabhama, though, when she saw your love for the gopis, she got a bit upset, so she's gone. In other words, she got a bit jealous, so she's gone. And then Uddhava tells Krishna what Padmavati said,
Padmavati, before she really got overwhelmed and went running out to try and grab hold of Krishna, Padmavati, Sri Sri Radha Radhanath Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki, before Padmavati really got overwhelmed, as things were just building up, and she saw how the queens, like Satyabhama and Rukmini, were really becoming attracted to Krishna in Vrindavan. So Padmavati, she made some rude comments. She said, "Oh, you like this, do you? You want to do that, do you? Well, look, I tell you what you should do. I will give you a nice program of worshipping the, they're like nomadic tribeswomen. They're very low class, Abira. You know, it mentions, so in the Bhagavatam how they, what is it? Anyway, they're attracted to Krishna, but they're just like tribal forest dwellers, living around nomadic people, but they have an attraction to Krishna, but they're very low class. Oh yeah. After Balaram killed Dainakasura, it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Initially, they wanted, the cowherd boys wanted to get the fruit from the tal trees in Talavana. But then, when Dainakasura and all his friends were killed, all the fruit, lots of fruit, fell down. It was there for the taking. But it all got contaminated by the blood of Dainakasura and his friends. So therefore the cowherd boys left all the fruit. But then those tribal women, they came and they ate that fruit. They didn't worry it was contaminated with blood. And they're mentioned a few times in the 10th canto in the Krishna books. So they're kind of low-class forest dwellers. Nomadic people, they just move around like sort of gypsies. So Padmavati says, "Oh, you like this, do you? Well, if you want to attain it, I can give you a good program. Just worship these nomadic women, low-class women, and then you can attain it." So she's being insulting. And then Devaki says that, you know, "I became the mother of Krishna because I prayed for so many years, but I didn't attain what Nanda and Yashoda attained. They attained such pure love for Krishna, and now you've seen it. So don't make fun like that." So then, let's see. Well, a few things happen. I think we could go over the page even, where Krishna calls for Satyabhama. She comes. And what doesn't come out in the overview book is that Satyabhama purposely disappeared. She wanted to emulate a little bit of the mood of Vrindavan, that the gopis are not so cooperative with Krishna. Krishna tells the gopis, "You come here." And the gopis tell Krishna, "You come here." Or something like that. So, not like the queens. When Krishna says, "You come here," the queens come here right away. that Satyabhama wants to kind of stimulate Krishna, because she knows that he's been enjoying this Vrindavan mood, and he wants to explain about it to the others who know less than she does. And so in order just to increase this mood, she starts acting a bit funny, disobedient, but actually she's doing it deliberately to just set the scene even more so Krishna can really get into the mood and explain very nicely. So then she comes, Krishna gets on her case and chastises her. "You weak-minded Satrajiti." This is just like, you're acting just like when you wanted that Parijata flower. So, don't think you can control me. So then Krishna explains, this is all now in number 11. It's kind of a little elaborate. Krishna explains what the situation is in Vrindavan and why he has not gone back to Vrindavan. And just how amazing those devotees in Vrindavan are. So, there's a whole explanation given there in number 11. I'm going to... I'll give a sort of a little abbreviated version of that. So, let's see. He says that these inhabitants of Vrindavan, just by seeing me, they become so dazed and bewildered by ecstasy from deep within that they don't even recognize their own bodies. That's when they see me. So, when they see me, they feel pain. They feel great pain for different reasons. Well, maybe I can just read through this number 11. I guess that would be appropriate. Brahma mentioned in his prayer that I'm not able to return the favor of the Brijvasis. That statement is not wrong, because I'm extremely indebted to the Brijvasis. If you say that I go to Vrindavan, if you say that if I go to Vrindavan and stay there, then my debt to the Brijvasis will be repaid and they'll become satisfied. So if you say that I should do that, in reply I say that I don't know if their suffering due to separation will be reduced if I go to Vrindavan and stay there. I don't know. In fact, Krishna says that pleasant union will increase their pain of separation. In other words, when I come back, if I go back, then you think they'll be happy and their separation will be gone, that pain. But no, it won't be gone. Because in their minds they'll be thinking, this is so nice, Krishna's back, but he's going to go again. Oh no. And they just, even though they're with me, they're going to get back into the same pain. This is the basic point. Even in union, they experience some unique emotion and become oblivious to themselves. In union and in separation, I'm unable to take care of their welfare. Even in union, they experience intense pain due to the anxiety of future separation. When I disappear, then sometimes they become as if they're dead. And sometimes they become mad due to the blazing fire of separation. Then they mistake a tamal tree to be me and embrace it and kiss it. Therefore, whether I stay in Vrindavan or stay away from Vrindavan, it's the same. Therefore, I don't go back. It's not, I don't think it's mentioned here, but he says that if I go back, the ecstasy will come to a higher level than it ever has before. But then when I go, because the ecstasy has gone to a higher level, when I go, the pain of separation will be greater than they've ever experienced it before. So I don't want that to happen. So I'm not going back. I'm going to stay away to try and keep that down as much as possible. So like this, Krishna explains this. It's like a great secret, really, why he doesn't go back to Vrindavan. Because he doesn't want the pain to increase. It's already too much. So therefore, he says, therefore I stay away. Then he says to the queens, this is now, well, I think it's still in number 11, actually. From verse 100 to 105, he says, "You know why I married you? Do you think it was because, you know, I brought here some nice girls, or that I would like for my wife, like I really want you? But you know why I married you? It's because you remind me a little of the Gopis. That's why I married you. Because in your own little ways, you are my substitutes." He says, "It first happened with Rukmini. When I saw her, I saw that her beauty slightly resembled that of the Gopis. Then I became attracted to her, and I decided to marry her." So Krishna tells them that you are all substitutes. Okay, let's see. So Krishna explains, this is now getting towards the end of number 11, I think. Yeah. Krishna explains to Satyabhama, he's mainly speaking to her. "Ah, willful woman." I think it's 106 to 117. "Ah, willful woman, please understand. All that I relished in Vrindavan gave me the highest pleasure. And though the glory of those times has now abandoned me, it still resides there in that place, Vrindavan. When submerged in the waves of that ocean of ecstasy, enjoying the ever-fresh, charming pastimes of Raja, I was so attracted to each of the all-enchanting residents that I never noticed the passing of the nights and days. I was so absorbed in this ocean of happiness that having to talk to such demigods as Brahma and watch them offer me prayers and homage seemed to me a painful disturbance. All these wonderful prayers." Lord Brahma's prayers in the 14th chapter. Krishna was thinking, "Ah, what a pain in the neck. Can't he finish quicker? Let me get back to my serious business of playing with the cowherd boys. So, therefore, I forgot the work that I had to do for the demigods, killing all the demons. For me, fighting the demons was nothing. But now, I cannot arouse the same emotions in the residents of Dwarka. I can't break your jealous pride. Krishna says, I feel embarrassed to play my flute because I'm afraid someone may laugh at me. I don't know if it's here. Anyway, he says that. Then he goes on and he explains like that. In number 12 somewhere, I guess. Something like that. It becomes a little less distinct towards the end. But Uddhava sees danger, great danger. Krishna is getting back into the Vrindavan mood. He's going to lose it again. And we're going to lose him. It's going to be back to the chaos. Oh my gosh, what to do? So he calls on the queens. You got to do something. Speak to him. Do something. Do anything. But bring him back down to earth. So they do that. And then Uddhava tells Krishna, your lunch is ready. So then, we're in 12 somewhere. So then Uddhava and Krishna and Balaram have lunch together. And Uddhava sits with Narada Muni is invited to lunch, rather, with Krishna and Balaram. And Uddhava is there. And Uddhava sits by Narada and tells him what's nice. Try this preparation. Try that preparation. And also tells Krishna, that looks very nice. So in this way he kind of preoccupies Krishna and keeps his feet on the ground. But then, it's sort of a combination of things. Krishna wants to explain about separation, this whole phenomenon of separation, which has been like the underlying theme. The main theme has been the love of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, but underlying that has been the particular aspect of their love, which is the love and separation. So Krishna wants to explain about that to Narada, so Narada can explain, Narada can understand more about this special good fortune of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and particularly of the gopis. That's one thing. But also, Krishna saw that when he told his wives that, you know what? Your substitutes. Your second best or third best, and it's just because, I can't be with the gopis, so I keep you around just to remind me of them. That's all. So he saw that some of them became a little disappointed. So he wanted also to encourage them. So this is straight out of that, the Brihadbhagavatamrita Gautamita. I'll read you a few verses in which Krishna explains the essence of all of this to inform Narada and also to encourage his wives who are feeling a little disappointed, neglected. So Krishna says, it is true that when one is parted from those one loves, pure love makes one suffer within, as if from a blazing forest fire. The burning pain creates a remorse that further deepens into them. So this is straight out of that, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. I'll read you a few verses in which Krishna explains the essence of all of this to inform Narada and also to encourage his wives who are feeling a little disappointed, neglected. So Krishna says, it is true that when one is parted from those one loves, pure love makes one suffer within, as if from a blazing forest fire. The burning pain creates a remorse that further deepens into irrepressible sorrow. Thus, one at first seems wretched. But this anguish of separation is praised as greater than the happiness of enjoying with those one loves. Separation is so pleasing to the mind that it cannot be described. And it always transforms at the end. At the end of the separation, it always transforms into an abundance of pleasure. Only experts in tasting these moods can understand how this happens. After the pain of despair is relieved, one's heart feels fully satisfied, delighting constantly as one enjoys the great pleasure of meeting with one's beloved. But one may want to feel that separation again, and may indeed feel distressed if one cannot feel that separation again. Then this is now for the queens. Thus, a person who can remind one of a beloved who is not present is considered the most sincere and helpful friend. So you queens, you know, pat on the back. It's okay. You're really nice, actually. You're really nice. You are my sincere and helpful friends, because you remind me of them. Please understand, when somehow made mindful of those one loves, one is given back one's life. Forgetting those more dear than one's own breath is more painful than dying. Those dearest life one can never forget, but when reminded of them in a special way, one feels happy, like one who has lived a life of good fortune. In other words, through this separation and being so deeply attached in love in separation, one achieves the topmost good fortune. So it is the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and it's particularly the gopis, who have the topmost good fortune. So now we are, let's see, in the last part of the overview book, and on that last page there, well, about almost halfway down, Krishna tells Narada, I want to give you a boon. Please ask for something. So Narada, in the book, this is verse 136 or so, Narada says, yes. Well, actually, Krishna thanks Narada. Says, you're responsible for all that, all these things that just happened. It was really good. Thanks a lot. So seeing you've been so nice, I want to give you a boon. Ask for something. So Narada says, yes. Please grant that no one will ever feel he has enough of your mercy, of your devotional service, or of pure love for you. Krishna laughs and says, Narada, what kind of boon are you asking? Everybody knows these things. It's obvious. So you ask for a better boon. Ask for a better boon. Don't worry about asking for this. This is obvious. Yeah, so Narada becomes ecstatic. And he asks for two boons. Well, I'll read them out, straight out of the book here. Shishi Radha Radhanath Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki. So, Narada asked Krishna, O swan, gliding in the lakes of the Vrijvasi's love, I wish that I may wander everywhere, always chanting and drinking the nectar of your names. Those most sweet names arise from the ocean of Gokula and spread the glories of your infinitely varied dress and ways of acting. As I wander, behaving like a madman, may I distribute joy to everyone in all the worlds through the names. That was the first request. Be endowed eternally with the power to worship your feet in pure love. Feet resplendent with the saffron dust from the picture-like breasts of the blessed gopis. And Krishna said, so be it. So I think we're all fortunate to have come in touch with these pastimes. And hopefully we've become a little convinced about them, because there's a lot of mercy there. So then they had lunch. That's from 146 to 149. And then from 150 to, oh, it's not even in the overview book, but the last 10 or 11 verses, Narada goes back to the sages. You remember the sages at Prayag? They were all wondering who got the greatest mercy. So Narada went back to report in that, okay, I've got the answer now. I've got the answer. So there's a nice conclusion here. There's a nice conclusion because, you know, ultimately the end is Maharaj Parikshit is concluding his explanation to his mother, having heard all of this. That is the final conclusion. So that is there. Let us read that. Maharaj Parikshit says, dear mother, you as well. Actually, before that, I'll just mention. Narada went back, convinced the sages, and they all took up the worship of Krishna in Vrindavan and started worshipping Madan Gopal and hearing about Krishna in Vrindavan. So then Maharaj Parikshit tells his mother, dear mother, you as well should always worship this young cowherd boy. He is the ocean that yields the nectar of the rasadas, in which divine gopis fully surround him, entranced by pure love. You should nourish the desire to be a servant of these gopis. You should constantly worship him in pure love as they did. And you should dedicate yourself to the sankirtan of his names. The gopis were consumed by the expansive flames of the wondrous blazing fire of love for Krishna. If my guru chants the names of these gopis and recalls a gopi's distinguishing qualities, he too is touched by sparks shooting forth from the flames of this intense fire, and he at once becomes greatly agitated. Therefore, in Srimad Bhagavatam, he has had to avoid pronouncing the gopis' names. If you follow my advice, and with pure love take shelter of the gopis and their master, Lord Sri Krishna, then, O Mother, I promise that by Krishna's mercy, you'll be able to understand something of the gopis' greatness. With the help of this most excellent narration about the Supreme Lord, which shows who has received the essence of the Lord's mercy, one can understand him for certain. Anyone who for any reason takes shelter with faith of this narration will quickly attain love for Lord Sri Krishna. And that is the end of the first part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Hare Krishna. That is the end of our seminar. I mean, I wasn't very well prepared for it, I must admit, but I hope you may have gained something from it. Thank you for being very patient students. And, yes, very nice. Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita ki. Srila Sanatana Goswami ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.